Darius Larson, and the title they have given me for being here at the village for 3 weeks is Village Philosopher. And I thought it might be appropriate before I tell you what I think that might mean. It's fascinating, people wandering by and saying, "Are you the village philosopher?" And I say, "Yes." And somebody said, "Tell me about truth," you know. I'm just curious, before, some of you have probably been here before and know a little bit about what the role of a village philosopher is supposed to be, but what conjures up in your mind when you heard the title village philosopher and you came here to, I don't know, conversations with the village philosopher, whatever the title is today. Any images? I mean, they don't have to be flattering. They can be just downright, I don't know what. But any images? Any thoughts on what a village philosopher is supposed to be about? Well,
the title is Meet Your Village Philosopher, I think, today.
Okay, thank you.
So we're going to go see the man in the mirror thing.
Okay. Sorry.
He lives way up on the mountain.
Yeah. There's a good book though out on that. If you meet a Buddha in the road, kill him. It's a good book. Philosophy department in University of Oklahoma. I think I used this phrase before, learning how to hang loose in the saddle. He rides horses, and he can always tell somebody who is new to horseback riding, they really hang on tight. When you hang on tight, all you get is sores. And to live gracefully is to learn to hang loose in the saddle. It doesn't mean reckless abandonment, but it's to hang, but loose.
That's kind of a tightrope then, between the two sides, being too rigid or too caught up in your own sense of definition and being too loose and too open.
Mm-hmm.
There's some danger on that side as well.
In fact, how comfortable are we? A lot of things we're talking about, we can put the two sides to. How are we with living the paradox? You know, one of Thomas Merton's, one of my favorite books from Thomas Merton is The Sign of Jonah. And in it, he talks about that sometimes I feel like I'm traveling to my destiny in a belly of a paradox. And all too often that is, you know, where you do this, if you do this, you know, so what do you do? And how do we find the power? And that's part of what the Christian faith is all about, to live the contradiction. You know, do we have, what's the danger with having the answers all the time? You know, the village philosopher, I think, should maybe never have. Somebody, whoever asked me what is truth, I said something back to him. I forgot what it was. I thought it was profound. The guy just walked on, so it probably wasn't. I said something, what is truth? And I said something about, I forgot what it was, and somebody else overheard it and said, "Who cares?" Do we have trouble? Is that a catchphrase that we feel something about, even though we maybe can't name it, we feel it, that we live in paradoxes a lot.
Sure.
We live in contradictions a lot. And we don't know how to put that together and call that who we are, because we think that we should not do that. Our image is that we should be consistent, and therefore we end up compromising.
You know, I perceive balance as being very important in the Christian life, but balance can lead you to be non-committed, wishy-washy Charlie Brown, too. Never taking any position, seeing both sides of every issue, you know, walking the tightrope so that you don't go in either direction, which just leads you down the middle of the path on everything.
A lot of people call that the Lutheran Church. How does the UCC look at that?
Pretty much the same way.
Can you help me and others identify those stepping stones that would enable us to to have power to live the contradictions, so that when we proclaim one or the other, we, you know, we have a force behind us, but we, I'm not saying that right. What is it that empowers us to live the paradox, to live the contradiction, so that when we're not living it, it's also okay, so we can actually proclaim one side or the other. I just answered my own question in a thought. The difference between grace and cheap grace has been defined by somebody like this, that God is like a big flowing river, and our task is to sit down on the riverbank and watch for God to flow through history. And when we see God, we jump in to embrace God and say, this is where God is, in the poor, in this issue, in that issue, whatever it is. There's God. Grace is jumping in and realizing that it's not God. But you're put back up to watch further where God is. Cheap grace is to sit on the river bank and say, there goes God. And never jump in to be involved. To live that paradox is to have the courage when you think God is present, or God, you want to co-create with God or speak a prophetic voice, and you think that's where it is, to have the courage to jump so you're not wishy-washy and be there, because you have the grace to know that if that's not God, you can, as Luther says, sin boldly. You know, because that's okay, at least you're attempting to do it. What are those stepping points? What do we look for, in other words, then, in order for us to think that God is present there and maybe not there? And in one sense, we could say that God is present everywhere, but, you know.
And when will we jump out and make a Christ-like decision or a Christ-like action? And when will we sit back and have that be okay?
Mm-hmm.
So many of the women, it seems like, in the congregation especially, feel that if they're not being what they think is Christ-like 24 hours a day, that they're living in sin and a very unhealthy way of being. And they think a Christ-like decision includes having chicken for supper, even though they hate it, that's what their family wants. And to say that there's a plane of the mundane that God could care less about, and to decide when you will be Christ-like and when you'll just be in the paradox. Have there be enough grace for that?
Mm-hmm. I guess there's a nice philosophical question just right into that. What's Christ-like?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Comes trippingly off the tongue, but
mm-hmm. That's right. That's mm-hmm. The question. What will that be? And maybe it's not so much. Maybe you could take one approach and say, well, it's going to have these standards or these characteristics. Or maybe it goes back to that signature or style statement. It's not something you have to think through, but a restlessness that will not let you go. And then, if you deny that, then you die a little bit. I don't know.
Why do I have to jump every time an issue comes up that somebody thinks is the way the Christian needs to go? I'm still a human. I'm still wandering through life trying to find what I think is my place. And yet, just saying I have to jump every time an issue comes up, do something Christ-like. And I have problems with it.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the issue is why. Are you saying that you feel like you have to jump, or you feel like you don't have to jump?
I feel like I don't have to jump, because I'm not really sure that I know that much about myself or everything else.
How do we know, back to your question, how do you know, are you questioning then whether or not that issue is centered in Christ-likeness? Or even if you agree that it's Christ-likeness, you may not want to be a part of it.
Someone
of both.
That's my place in life to wander down that path.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And is that okay for him? Or should he be jumping?
And who decides?
Yeah, who decides? my signature is to make other people jump. Big, yeah, sure. Yeah, you know. Good question. Good question. Any answers? Whatever we believe, as long as it's sincere, it's okay.
I think, you know, when you get to the point you can't sit any longer and then jump, and you can't stand it within yourself, then that's the time to jump.
And yet perhaps tolerance level of some, particularly as epitomizing nations or leaders, needs pride. And I'm trying to get away from the individualistic more to the community.
Somebody once said that the task of the preacher, maybe we should say the prophet, but let's say the task of the minister, because that includes lay and ordained. The task of the minister is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. It's to preach blessed disturbance and blessed assurance. You know, and once again, you're in that paradox. When do you need to be disturbed and when do you need to be assured? You know, when do I need to be disturbed and assured? You know, it's that balance. When do we? I mean, is it privatistic only when I know I'm complacent and I should be getting on some new bandwagon? Or is it when something stirs up within me? That moves me to a direction? Or is it when somebody else says you're getting fat and flabby, it means you're not living a Christian lifestyle, so you should diet? You know? I've been eating a lot of beer. What is it? What is it that motivates us to act, to jump? Or not to jump? Because not to jump is an action. To stay put is to make a decision. And most people say that's to make a decision not to decide, or decision for the status quo. And we have to, first of all, admit that no matter what we do. Even if we don't do anything, that is an action. And so we can't get around, we can't just say, well, it's not my responsibility. By saying that, we take a stand. And I think that could be a very valid stand, but it is a stand. Say I'm not going to vote in the upcoming elections because it's only between this person and this person or this person. This is a stand, and it may be a valid one. Did somebody say, like there's something more?
Yes, I did, because I was going to say something about it was saying that we only act in our extremes, that pushes us to do something. But actually, in what you just said, I am doing something when I'm doing nothing. It is saying something, and I need to think that through for myself, that there is an action.
I would kind of like to dovetail off of what you said and move away from individual things to maybe more of a corporate community thing. One of the reasons that I came to Holden was not only to help my own spiritual life, but to take something back to my congregation, a fairly young congregation, new mission church. I would like to get some ideas here about what ways you can bring the things that we've discussed here back to a congregation and have actually discussed and maybe dealt with.
The key thing is to go to the resource center and subscribe, but there's a lot more, but that's wonderful.
But I'm wondering if some people here, I mean, everyone's had experiences in different congregations, and maybe there are some techniques or tricks that they need to help.
Magic.
I'll never forget being a part of in Minneapolis directors of different drop-in centers and things. This is back in 69 or 70. We were all feeling lonely and we needed to get ideas on how to support each other and everything else, and so we met in these tea group type sessions and paid somebody to come in and facilitate for us. And the net result was seven out of the eight quit their directorships within the 6 weeks. You know, so sharing, you know, how to do it might be more depressing than optimistic. But let's jump in, yes. Okay, I am taking notes on some of these things. How long will you be here?
I'm just going to be here for 2 weeks.
Okay. I am taking notes on some of these things. How long will you be here?
Just this week.
Okay.
I think we do need to, when we start gravitating on something specific to talk about, keep at least some distinction whether we're talking of a corporate style, like was suggested, or the individual style. What are the elements of each? Because I think certain things affect an individual style differently than a group. And I don't think you can really generalize across.
Can you give an example of how they're different?
Well, as an individual, you come down to making, perhaps you have a way of making a decision and taking a course of action. And I would think the process would be different for an individual than it would be for a group, because as soon as you're working with a group, then you have to decide whether there you may not have a consensus, you may not be all in favor of one course of action. To what extent do you recognize the minority? To what extent do you take a more moderate course of action?
But
how
I get.
Go ahead. How often, though, do you have an internal consensus, and you still have to act? I've seen them not very similar.
I would think, my God, this not in clinical terms, but I'm thankful for people who can act schizophrenically. I mean, I'm a multiphrenic. I mean, I make compromises in myself and take the easy way out or the compromise because there's all sorts of actions. But let's not limit it there. I think I can learn a lot from community consensus building stuff on how I internally struggle and how I internally struggle with things. I can learn a lot about the corporate struggle also. That's why I asked what's the difference. The issues may be different because some of the things I'm totally blind to and I don't think it's important at all internally, whichever face or mask I want to, person I think I am at that moment. But there may be somebody else out there that's saying I should be concerned about this issue or that person. So there's corporately, I think, helps my multifrenic nature be more accountable. And there's where there's a difference, is having me become more accountable. And I think that's hopefully what one thing about the church that we're supposed to be all about, I would think. What would be, though, a couple people have mentioned that. Let's take the last 5 minutes here, dealing with corporate issues. Corporate meaning not necessarily corporations, but church issues, or Holden. You know, maybe the churches back there have something to tell and share and teach Holden, too. It can work both ways. But let's think of the community you're from and this community. What are some of the things that we might want to deal with besides the one thing of a real show and tell of successes and failures so that we can learn from them? Is it one area? What are some of the other issues or areas?
You mean in relation to your own church?
Yeah.
In relation to people here. How many people here that go to one service know all the people that go to the second service in your church? I don't. And we've been going to our church for over 10 years now. We sat in front of some people that I didn't know, my wife did, because she's more active in the late schools. But you don't know all the people in your group. You go up and say, hi, I'm so-and-so, and we haven't met before any guests or visitors, and they've been members longer than you have. And this is something I think that Holden can do, that you open up person to person, one-to-one basis a little bit more. And it sounds like that's part of the program with how to do that today type of program.
Yes.
Well, and I think some of that should be specifically skill-oriented, I guess. Now, this is a bias, because I work with personal things, You know, I teach in a speech department where that's part of our curriculum, so though that's not my area of specialty, I'm sensitized to that. And I think that there's more than just saying we should, that if people are concerned about the skills of going out and meeting other people and working on things, that should be a skill orientation rather than just a philosophical statement that it's good.
Uh-huh.
You know, and because it's not, you know, it's not, I don't think we can point to a congregation and say this congregation is bad at that. You know, could you take this setting? And it's inherent here that people find it easier to talk to people that they already know. I mean, you know, you look around at the dining hall here and the staff talks to the staff. That doesn't mean that's bad, it just means it's a natural human condition that you talk to the people that you know. And I don't think it's enough to just have a different attitude toward that. I think you have to have different skills toward that.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
I think there's an issue there for a congregation just dealing with the nature of the community. And is there a natural community that we should strive for? And when you have a congregation, a worshiping congregation of 300, are we to have a sense of intimacy with all those people to some degree or another? You know, I mean, just what is the Christian community that we're striving for in our parishes?
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect there are different levels of that. Are there some levels that are in some sense natural? Are there some levels that we are striving for that perhaps are not so natural? I use that word for lack of a better. I don't know where we'd find our norm. But,
okay. Uh-huh. Is that a hand?
Well, I'm trying to put it in words. When we're talking about the congregation, we're talking about the body of Christ. We're talking about not just the congregation, we're talking about the whole church as the body of Christ. And the good picture, because you can carry it a long ways. And the relationships you're talking about, the hands, you know, interact a lot. And so they're probably, you know, much more closely related than the two elbows. But the two elbows also have to cooperate or the body doesn't function properly. And consequently, when we're talking about relationships, we are talking about different levels. But if you think of the levels, then you say, this one's better than this one. What we're talking about is different relationships and different interactions.
Mm-hmm.
Not any of them being better than another, but in order to make the body function as a body.
Which I would even say, I would like the analogy, not because bodies are... Our minds think of some parts of our bodies which are not as, you know, glorious as other parts or something, you know. Whether that's philosophically true or not, our gut level, we think that way. And maybe we think that way about this analogy too, but back to the theme for the whole summer, one Lord, many members, that, we can say Christ is the director of the orchestra, there are many different instruments. All of them are important to have the symphony sound like a symphony, and that does not always mean in harmony. our symphony isn't a barber shop, quintet, whatever. The problem is sometimes a tuba wants to be a piccolo. They don't know their style. And our point is to try to learn our notes and learn those notes well. And sometimes we want a solo when the conductor wants us to play all together. And it's that sort of thing which I think is, in my mind, a little less hierarchical than when we talk about body, although that's much more scriptural. But I think the intent of both are the same. But well, that's a whole other issue too. Is Jesus the Christ the director of this orchestra, or are we expanding to even further? But I don't know. Some people do like to solo, and sometimes there's need for solos. I mean, there's been some guest soloists in orchestras that are just made that orchestra sound better than I ever thought that orchestra could sound. And we sometimes need soloists to draw out that about them. But other times we really don't. So it is a blending.
This evening after Vespers, and if any of you want to help me with figuring out what to do tomorrow at 10:45, talk to me about these issues, and we'll have you sit up here with me. You don't have to, you can sit up there too, but thank you, and let's go have a bathroom break or whatever else you may need. Yeah, that one. You're trying to think of that. Interrobang, that's the question mark, exclamation mark we were trying to think of. What it was called? Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. We couldn't think of what it was. You too.
I didn't even want to get into it. I just put it to sleep. But on the question of community, I don't know, unoffered to life together or not.
That mean that is the good life, to live gracefully, or?
Yeah. I said to my friend, I was trying to live gracefully, and he says, well, once you learn how to live gracefully, maybe you can live loosely. Wow. I mean, that there's even more freeing just to be, and to allow those gifts to be evoked that are there in me, and be alive.
Tom Boyd, who's a teacher in the philosophy department in the University of Oklahoma, I think I used this phrase before, learning how to hang loose in the saddle. He rides horses, and you can always tell somebody who is new to horseback riding, they really hang on tight. When you hang on tight, all you get is sores. And to live gracefully is to learn to hang loose in the saddle. It doesn't mean reckless abandonment, but it's to hang, but loose.
That's kind of a tight rope, man. Between the two sides, being too rigid or too caught up in your own sense of definition, and being too loose and too open, there's some danger on that side as well.
But how comfortable are we? A lot of things we're talking about, we can put the two sides to. How are we with living the paradox? One of Thomas Merton's. One of my favorite books from Thomas Merton is The Sign of Jonah, and in it he talks about that sometimes I feel like I'm traveling to my destiny in a belly of a paradox. And all too often that is, you know, where you do this, if you do this, you know, so what do you do, and how do we find the power, and that's part of what the Christian faith is all about, to live the contradiction. You know, do we have what's the danger with having the answers all the time? You know, the village philosopher, I think, should maybe never have. Whoever asked me what is true, is I said something back to him. I forgot what it was, but I thought it was profound. The guy just walked on, so it probably wasn't. I said something. What is truth? And I said something about. I forgot what it was, and somebody else overheard it and said, who cares? Do we have trouble, is that a catchphrase that we feel something about, even though we maybe can't name it, we feel it, that we live in paradoxes a lot. Sure. We live in contradictions a lot. And we don't know how to put that together and call that who we are, because we think that we should not do that. Our image is that we should be consistent, and therefore we end up compromising.
You know, I perceive balance as being very important in the Christian life, but balance can lead you to be non-committed, wishy-washy Charlie Brown too, never taking any position, seeing both sides of every issue, walking the tightrope so that you don't go in either direction. It's just lead you down the middle of the path on everything.
A lot of people call that the Lutheran Church. How does the UCC look at that?
Pretty much the same way.
Can you help me and others identify those stepping stones that would enable us to have power to live the contradictions, so that when we proclaim one or the other, we have a force behind us, but I'm not saying that right. What is it that empowers us to live the paradox, to live the contradiction, so that when we're not living it, it's also okay, so we can actually proclaim one side or the other? I just answered my own question and a thought. The difference between grace and cheap grace has been defined by somebody like this, that God is like a big flowing river, and our task is to sit down on the riverbank and watch for God to flow through history. And when we see God, we jump in to embrace God and say, this is where God is, in the poor, in this issue, in that issue, whatever it is. There's God. Grace is jumping in and realizing that it's not God. But you're put back up to watch further where God is. Cheap grace is to sit on the river bank and say, there goes God. And never jump in to be involved. To live that paradox is to have the courage, when you think God is present or God, you want to co-create with God or speak a prophetic voice, and you think that's where it is, to have the courage to jump so you're not wishy-washy and be there, because you have the grace to know that if that's not God, you can, as Luther says, sin boldly. You know, because that's okay, at least you're attempting to do it. What are those stepping points? What do we look for, in other words, then, in order for us to think that God is present there and maybe not there? And in one sense, we could say that God is present everywhere, but, you know.
And when will we jump out and make a Christ-like decision or a Christ-like action? And when will we sit back and have that be okay?
Mm-hmm.
So many of the women, it seems like, in the congregation especially, feel that if they're not being what they think is Christ-like 24 hours a day, that they're living in sin and a very unhealthy way of being. And they think a Christ-like decision includes having chicken for supper, even though they hate it because their family wants. And to say that there's a plane of the mundane that God could care less about, and to decide when you will be Christ-like and when you'll just be in the paradox. Have there be enough grace for that?
Mm-hmm. I guess there's a nice philosophical question just to put right into that. What's Christ-like?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trippingly off the tongue. But.
Mm-hmm, that's right. What will that be? And maybe it's not so much, maybe you could take one approach and say, well, it's going to have these standards or these characteristics. Or maybe it goes back to that signature or style statement. It's not something you have to think through, but a restlessness that will not let you go. And then if you deny that then you die a little bit. I don't know.
Why do I have to jump every time an issue comes up that somebody thinks is the way the Christian needs to go? I'm still a human. I'm still wandering through life trying to find what I think is my place. And yet, just saying I have to jump every time an issue comes up, do something Christ-like. And I have problems with that.
Of course, the issue is why. Are you saying that you feel like you have to jump, or you feel like you don't have to jump?
I feel like I don't have to jump, because I'm not even sure that I know that much about my
myself or everything else.
How do we know, back to your question, how do you know, are you questioning then whether or not that issue is centered in Christ-likeness? Or even if you agree that it's Christ-likeness, you may not want to be a part of it.
Probably someone of both. That's my place in life to wander down that path.
Uh-huh. And is that okay for him? Or should he be jumping?
And who decides?
Yeah, who decides? My signature is to make other people jump. Big, yeah, sure. Yeah, you know. Good question. Good question. Any answers? Whatever we believe, as long as it's sincere, it's okay.
I think, you know, when you get to the point you can't sit any longer and then jump, and you can't stand it within yourself, then that's the time to jump.
And yet perhaps the tolerance level of some, particularly as epitomizing nations or leaders, needs prodding. I'm trying to get it away from the individualistic more into the community.
Somebody once said that the task of the preacher, maybe we should say the prophet, but let's say the task of the minister, because that includes lay and ordained. The task of the minister is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. It's to preach blessed disturbance and blessed assurance. You know, and once again, you're in that paradox. When do you need to be disturbed and when do you need to be assured? You know, and when do I need to be disturbed and assured? You know, it's that balance. When do we? I mean, is it privatistic only when I know I'm complacent and I should be getting on some new bandwagon? Or is it when something stirs up within me? That cup moves me to a direction? Or is it when somebody else says you're getting fat and flabby, it means you're not living a Christian lifestyle, so you should diet? You know? I've been eating a lot of beer. What is it? What is it that motivates us to act, to jump? Or not to jump? Because not to jump is an action. To stay put is to make a decision. And most people say that's to make a decision not to decide, or decision for the status quo. And we have to, first of all, admit that no matter what we do. Even if we don't do anything, that is an action. And so we can't get around, we can't just say, well, it's not my responsibility. By saying that, we take a stand. And I think that could be a very valid stand, but it is a stand. Say I'm not going to vote in the upcoming elections because it's only between this person and this person or this person. This is a stand, and it may be a valid one. Did somebody say, like there's something
I
more?
I guess I did because I was going to say something about it. You were saying that we only act in our extremes, that pushes us to do something. But actually, in what you just said, I am doing something when I'm doing nothing. I mean, it is saying something, and I need to think that through for myself, that there is an action.
Yeah. I would kind of like to dovetail off of what you said and move away from individual things to maybe more of a corporate or community thing. One of the reasons that I came to Holden was not only to help my own spiritual life, but to take something back to my congregation. I mean, a fairly young congregation, new mission church. I would like to get some ideas here about what ways you can bring the things that we've discussed here back to a congregation and have it actually discussed and maybe dealt with.
The key thing is to go to the Resource Center and subscribe, but there's a lot more, but that's wonderful.
But I'm wondering if some people here, I mean, everyone's had experiences in different congregations, and maybe there are some techniques or
I'll never forget being a part of, in Minneapolis, directors of different drop-in centers and things. This was back in 69 or 70. We were all feeling lonely and we needed to get ideas on how to support each other and everything else. And so we met in these tea group type sessions and paid somebody to come in and facilitate for us. And the net result was seven out of the eight quit their directorships within the 6 weeks. You know, so sharing, you know, how to do it might be more depressing than the opposite. But let's jump in the escalator. Okay. I am taking notes on some of these things. How long will you be here?
Just the same.
Okay.
I think we do need to, when we start gravitating on something specific to talk about, keep at least some distinction whether we're talking of a corporate style, like was suggested, or the individual style. What are the elements of each? Because I think certain things affect an individual style differently than a group. And I don't think you can really generalize across.
Can you give an example of how they're different?
Well, as an individual, you come down to making, perhaps you have a way of making a decision and taking a course of action. And I would think the process would be different for an individual than it would be for a group, because as soon as you're working with a group, then you have to decide whether there you may not have a consensus, you may not be all in favor of one course of action. To what extent do you recognize the minority? To what extent do you take a more moderate course of action?
But
how
I get.
Go ahead. How often, though, do you have an internal consensus?
I would think, my God, this not in clinical terms, but I'm thankful for people who can act schizophrenically. I mean, I'm a multiphrenic. I mean, I make compromises in myself and take the easy way out or the compromise because there's all sorts of actions. But let's not limit it there. I think I can learn a lot from community consensus building stuff on how I internally struggle and how I internally struggle with things. I can learn a lot about the corporate struggle also. That's why I asked what's the difference. The issues may be different because some of the things I'm totally blind to and I don't think it's important at all internally, whichever face or mask I want to, person I think I am at that moment. But there may be somebody else out there that's saying I should be concerned about this issue or that person. So that's corporately, I think, helps my multiphrenic nature be more accountable. And there's where there's a difference, is having me become more accountable. And I think that's hopefully what one thing about the church that we're supposed to be all about, I would think. What would be, though, a couple people have mentioned that. Let's take the last 5 minutes here, dealing with corporate issues. Corporate meaning not necessarily corporations, but church issues, or Holden, maybe the churches back there have something to tell and share and teach Holden too. It can work both ways, but let's think of the community you're from and this community. What are some of the things that we might want to deal with besides the one thing of a real show and tell of successes and failures so that we can learn from them? Is it one area? What are some of the other issues or areas? Yes.
Well, and I think some of that should be specifically skill oriented. I guess now this is a bias. Because I work with personal things. I'm teaching a speech department where that's part of our curriculum. So though that's not my area of specialty, I'm sensitized to that. And I think that there's more than just saying we should. That if people are concerned about the skills of going out and meeting other people and working on things, that that should be a skill orientation rather than just a philosophical statement that it's good.
Uh-huh.
You know, and because it's not, you know, it's not, I don't think we can point to a congregation and say this congregation is bad at that. You know, because you take this setting and it's inherent here that people find it easier to talk to people that they already know. I mean, you know, you look around at the dining hall here and the staff talks to the staff. That doesn't mean that's bad, it just means it's a natural human condition that you talk to the people that you know. And I don't think it's enough to just have a different attitude toward that. I think you have to have different mm-hmm. skills toward that.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
I think there's an issue there for our congregations just dealing with the nature of the community. Mm-hmm. And
which I would even say, I would like the analogy, not because bodies are, our minds think of some parts of our bodies which are not as, you know, glorious as other parts or something, you know. Whether that's philosophically true or not, our gut level, we think that way. And maybe we think that way about this analogy too, but back to the theme for the whole summer, one Lord, many members, that, you know, if we can say Christ is the director of the orchestra, you know, there are many different instruments. All of them are important to have the symphony sound like a symphony. And that does not always mean in harmony. You know, we don't, we're not, a symphony isn't a barber shop, quintet, whatever. The problem is sometimes a tuba wants to be a piccolo. They don't know their style. And our point is to try to learn our notes and learn those notes well. And sometimes we want a solo when the conductor wants us to play all together. And it's that sort of thing which I think is, in my mind, a little less hierarchical than when we talk about body, although that's much more scriptural. But I think the intents of both are the same. But, well, that's a whole other issue too. Is Jesus the Christ the director of this orchestra, or are we expanding to even further? But I don't know. Some people do like to solo, and sometimes there's need for solos. I mean, there's been some guest soloists in orchestras that are just made that orchestra sound better than I ever thought that orchestra could sound. And we sometimes need soloists to draw out that about them. But other times we really don't. So it is a blending. Our time is up for today. I'm going to try to put some pieces together for this, and we're going to try for tomorrow's time slot to focus in on maybe one or two key issues, which will be, I think I'll try to find out some sort of snazzy title and put it up on the board. Tonight is our first for this week evening forum, and because I did not have this input and I wanted to do some pre-thinking on it, I took one which was a big issue the last time I was here, and the title of it is Gay and Christian, ! And we're going to look at the whole role of what the church is and what the church's response and attitude should be about homosexuality and how we struggle with that issue in our own lives and in our own church lives, and what does it mean to be an inclusive church in that realm. So that's what we're about this evening after Vespers. And if any of you want to help me with figuring out what to do tomorrow at 10:45, talk to me about these issues.